Paul Smith from consumer.org.nz wants to set one of these things off, but I've just said no because I value my hearing, and I know these things are piercing, and I know they also chirp and can be annoying. And you might have guessed we're talking about smoke alarms, and Paul's been testing a range of them, and we'll have the results of those tests in just a moment. But first, what's the main thing that you've discovered about smoke alarms? Because there are so many of them on the market out there.
There are, and there are two types. There's two technologies involved in smoke alarms, photoelectric and ionisation. Photoelectric, in a nutshell, is the technology that you want to go for, and ionisation is the one you want to avoid.
Okay, so photoelectric gets the green light, ionisation gets the red light, do not buy, stay away from. Why do you say that? If there are these two technologies on the market, why is one so good and the other one is so bad?
Well, I guess the reason for a smoke alarm is to alert you to a fire in enough time for you and your family to get out of a house safely. And the problem with the ionisation alarms is that in one particular type of fire, a smouldering fire, they don't alert you with enough time to get out, or they take a lot longer to alert you than the photoelectric alarm. And that can be, you know, a matter of life or death.
And so how do these two technologies work? How does ionisation work? Why is it so slow at recognising a slow smouldering fire? And I'm assuming here's visible smoke, the sort of stuff that you can see.
Yeah, it's all about visible smoke is the difference. Photoelectric, I'll start with that. Photoelectric is essentially it's a small sensor with a light source and a detector that detects the light. And if anything blocks the light from the light source, the detector realises the light's been obscured and it goes off. So visible smoke gets in the way of the light and it registers that there's smoke in the house. With an ionisation alarm, it doesn't work with visible sources. The ionisation method is to ionise the air, so it electrically charges the air, and then it compares that to a reference value. So air in the sensor should have a certain amount of charge. Now, if there's any impurities in the air, which includes smoke, then that's different to the reference value, and so the ionisation alarm will go off and trigger an alarm.
Right, and that change in reference value could also be something like moisture. I'm thinking steam here, because I have heard of smoke alarms going off if they're near a shower or a bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. So they can go off through steam. It could be just cooking fumes in the air. And ionisation alarms are incredibly sensitive to that sort of thing. And the ones that are on the market, they recommend you don't put them anywhere close to kitchens or bathrooms or anywhere where you might generate that. But the big thing with the fires is the smouldering versus a flaming fire. Now, a flaming fire produces a lot of very small particles that change the ionisation of the air. So ionisation alarms respond really well to those. But smouldering fires produce larger particles of visible smoke. That has less of an effect on the ionisation, so they take longer to respond. And they actually, you can, you know, tests have shown that they can take 5-6 minutes and the smouldering fire actually has to turn into a full-on flaming fire before they'll register the fires there.
So consumer is recommending do not buy ionisation smoke alarms. Just don't even look at them.
Absolutely. We don't think there's any reason for anybody to buy an ionisation alarm. The Residential Tenancies Act that was changed last year to make smoke alarms compulsory in rentals specifies they have to be photoelectric alarms. The building code says they have to be photoelectric alarms, and yet we still can go out and buy ionisation alarms on the shelves.
Why are they still on the market then?
They're cheap.
So let's look at photoelectric. So photoelectrics, from what you've said, is essentially looking at a light source, and it's looking at a change in that light source, i.e. something gets in the way between that light source and some sort of monitor that is measuring the intensity of that light. And this is where a smoke particle creeps into the gap and it goes, there's been a change here, and you get the whoop, 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 whoop.
Absolutely. It's really easy to grasp, right? If your house is filled with smoke, you want to get out. The smoke alarm, the photoelectric sensor, just is a small version of that. If there's smoke blocking the light, then it will go off and warn you.
But what are the challenges with regards to something like dust, I'm thinking, and insects and small particles that you get in the house that may block that light beam?
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons for false alarms. And, you know, everybody has had a smoke alarm that's gone off as a false alarm. And one of the culprits for that is dust or something in the air. And exactly, if you get dust in your smoke alarm sensor, then you'll get a false alarm. So it's recommended, and all the manufacturers recommend it as well, that you actually maintain these things, and occasionally you take them down and you vacuum them to get rid of dust. And, you know, obvious things like if you're doing something that's going to create dust, maybe take the sensors down while you're doing it, or don't put them near a heating vent that may stir up dust in the air, because you're more likely to get false alarms.
So what did you actually test then with regards to these smoke alarms? Because, as we said before, there are a number on the market, and I see you've tested some, what, nearly 15 different units. So what do? Just go about sticking them in like a barbecue and throw some leaves in there and see? What do you actually measure?
A bit like that, but a little bit more scientific.
I was going to say, there'll be a number of subscribers out there will be saying, what? I thought our money went to more technical, durable tests.
Well, instead of a barbecue, we created a smoke chamber. Then we used a number of sources. So we put a number of these alarms in a chamber and then put a fan in there so that the smoke would be passed through at a reasonably constant pace. And we used a number of smoke sources, and they varied from burning some paraffin to setting fire to wood chips, some smouldering upholstery foam like you'd find in a sofa, right down to checking for nuisance alarms. We got a George Foreman grill, put a burger patty on it, and created some smoke and cooking fumes that way, see if they'd go off.
So those are, the critical factors for a home user is the nuisance alarms, because I know if they're going off at the drop of a hat, you tend to either turn them off or put them in a drawer. I know traditionally when they've started to chirp, which is another thing we'll talk about. But basically, if you get those false positives, you end up taking the battery out and they're worthless.
Yeah, exactly. And I've stood underneath enough smoke alarms in my time to flapping a tea towel to know how blooming annoying it is. Yeah, so the nuisance alarms are those reasons. And, you know, it's a bit of amusement that, oh, yeah, they're going off again. But it's actually really dangerous, because they're the reasons why alarms get taken down. And once they're taken down, they're useless. And what we found with the nuisance alarms, amazingly, was smoke alarms don't know the difference between a nuisance source and a real source. They can't tell if it's a real fire or not. So the alarms that are good at responding to real fires are also really good at responding to nuisance sources, unfortunately.
Of course.
Now, the standards, there are standards for smoke alarms, and they set sensitivity levels, so they recognise that. So to get one of the international standards, a smoke alarm has to respond quickly enough but not be so sensitive that they're going off at drop of a hat.
And I guess a lot of that then is about placement in the home, isn't it? So it's making sure you're putting it somewhere where you're going to minimise those nuisance alarms.
Exactly. And don't put them in the kitchen. Don't put them outside the door to your bathroom where you're going to open it and steam's going to billow out. The best practice is to put them in hallways and escapeways, and ideally in every bedroom that you've got on every floor. The fire service also recommend you put them in the living areas as well, which is probably good advice. So.
Paul, I mentioned the chirp factor earlier, and this is where the smoke alarm starts chirping at you. Why do they chirp in the first place?
The chirping's usually because they are warning you that they've got a low battery and the battery is due for replacement. A couple of years ago, all smoke alarms had one of those square 9-volt batteries in them. If you're lucky, they lasted for about a year. You'd always get those chirps, and you'd always get them in the small hours of the morning, because that's when it's cold and that's when the battery voltage drops, so that's when the alarm thinks the battery needs replacing. 2 a.m. chirps.
Of course. It was always in the middle of the night. And you were sort of in that sort of drifting, sort of semi-awake, semi-conscious state. And you think, what's going on? And then it would stop as it warmed up.
And you wondered if you'd actually heard it or not until the next night when it happened again.
So what are the new battery systems they have for a lot of these new alarms?
Well, most of the new ones now come with a built-in sealed lithium-ion battery. And the manufacturers claim they're good for anything from 5 to 10 years, so they're fit and forget. The battery shouldn't go down very quickly, because while a smoke alarm's just sitting there doing nothing, it's not draining much from the battery. We have heard reports that some of them are only lasting for maybe 2 or 3 years. So that's the next phase that we're going to do, is look into that and say, well, how are these batteries lasting? Can we investigate that area where people are taking smoke alarms down? Because it's one thing to have a smoke alarm there, but the next thing to make your choice of which one to buy is which ones are going to last and which ones am I not going to then tamper with and start removing.
Let's have a quick look at the results, Paul, because you've tested some 20 smoke alarms here. And don't worry about getting a pen and paper, because there's a link to the report. If you go to rnz.co.nz/this-what, there's a link and there's information on where to actually position smoke alarms in the home, as well as information on the models that you've rated. How does the report break down? How have you sort of gone about grading these? Because it must be quite complex.
We decided because smoke alarms essentially have to respond quickly enough, but not too quickly, rather than try and break them down into individual models and their exact performance, we decided to group them together and say these are the best group that you can get. And we've ended up with 8 or 9 that we think are all incredibly good choices, all of them photoelectric.
And they go from Code Red here at $8 right through to the Nest Protect at $219. I mean, that's a huge amount of variance in cost.
It is, and you get different features for that. So the basic Code Red and some of the others that, you know, essentially are the smoke alarms that you put on the ceiling, they've got a test button, a hush button, and that's it. They're fit and forget. Some of the others, like the Nest, you go up to the Nest, and it's far more than a smoke alarm. It's got a carbon monoxide alarm in it. It connects to your smartphone. You can link multiple alarms together, so which is a really good idea. So if one goes off, detects smoke, they all go off. Those also have voice alerts as well, which is another thing to mention. Rather than that piercing alarm that goes off, some of them now have a very pleasant voice, a motherly voice, you might say, saying there is smoke detected. It's an emergency. Please leave the house. And research has shown that that is far more effective at waking children than having a piercing alarm going off.
And the Nest is a branded product, but they're linked with Google, aren't they, with the Google Home network?
Weren't
they an early sort of adopter or an early way of integrating Google Home into your home through one of these nodes?
Yeah, Nest make a whole range of stuff, some of which is available here. They do security cameras, thermostats, smoke alarms, and they're owned by Google. So we get a smaller range of their products, and their smoke alarm and their security cameras. But you can link all of these together. So they're like a home, smart home company that makes smoke alarms.
So let's just recap here. If you're out there in the market for a smoke alarm, and the fact is, if you own a home and don't have them in your home, you need to get them in there. I mean, that's the message here, isn't it?
That's the bottom line. Ultimately, if you're looking for a smoke alarm and you're confused about what's out there, a photoelectric smoke alarm or multiple photoelectric smoke alarms installed in your house is the bottom line of what you need to do.
And if you want those model numbers that got the good ratings, then drop into radionz.co.nz/thiswap, and there's a link there right now. Thanks, Paul. Paul Smith from consumer.org.nz.